Sunday morning talking about the fact that one of the basic principles in the art of being a parent is to strike the proper balance between love and discipline. Those are not really contradictory terms. There is no love without discipline, and there is no discipline without love. There might be punishment without love, but there is no discipline without love. And the purpose of discipline is not punishment. The purpose of discipline is self-discipline. That is, my opinion, my philosophy of child raising is that we teach a child to discipline himself. I would point out that we have every year something for the Bible college. I know our experience is typical. We have about a third of our freshman class doesn't make it. Most of those kids have the gray matter to make it. They have the ability to do college work, and they have the desire to do college work. Nobody's making them be there. They wanted to come, but they do not have the self-discipline to do what they have to do to make it to CFBC. Now, when it comes time to do the reading or start the term paper, so much easier at that, although they really want to do it overall. When it comes right down to a particular time when they have to choose between going to the beach or pizza or doing their work, they really cannot make themselves do what they really want to do, basically. And so they just don't get it done. They're self-disciplined. Yeah, but we have many students who often, we have many students who will not make it, and they'll go grow up a couple of years, come back, and then they have enough self-discipline to do it. That's very unfortunate. It's very tragic because they're good kids. But nobody ever made them do what, nobody ever taught them that if you're going to make it in life, most of the time you have to do what is really not the most fun at the moment. I would point out that most adults, those who are over 40, are not on plan A in their life. Whatever it was they planned, whenever, if you'd asked them when they were 16 years old what they were going to be or what they were going to do, most of them are not doing that now. They're not on plan A. Some are not on plan B. Some are not on any plan at all. They just happen to be what they're, what they're doing. It's just what they happen. It's just sort of what life dished up to them. Why? Well, many reasons. Sometimes it's not our fault. It's their fault. But most of the time, it's simply a lack of self-discipline. When the time came to do the hard thing that had to be done in order to make plan A, they simply didn't have enough self-discipline to do it. One of the reasons why it's a growth industry. Losing weight in America is a multi-billion dollar industry. Why? Because a man or a woman will pay somebody several hundred dollars to make them do what they can do for nothing if they just had self-discipline. I mean, that burns, my wife said. I pay anybody $200 a year to tell me not to eat. I can tell myself that. Isn't that right? So why? It's because of self-discipline. And our culture is against self-discipline. The message of our culture is, if it feels good, do it. Our kids, you realize our kids are hammered. This is hammered into them. If you want to do it, it's okay. And if it's fun, do it. It's hammered into our kids by their culture, by the music primarily. And our kids get our kids are getting many of their attitudes from their music. They're coming in the back door, sort of sneaking in. And that message is not the message of self-discipline. The message of hang loose. Well, the purpose of discipline, in my opinion, is self-discipline. That is, to teach the kids to do what's right, not necessarily what's easy. Sometimes it's not very easy to do. Usually it's not the easiest thing to do what's right or what must be done. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
It's true. So that's the purpose of self-discipline. I feel very sorry for kids whose parents asked their permission to be their parents, and who were raised with the conviction that were raised simply without self-discipline. They're pitiful. They're unhappy. These kids who come to CFBC and don't make it simply because they have no self-discipline, they hate themselves. They get very discouraged. They're embarrassed, humiliated. And I feel like whenever that happens, I'm if I did what I wanted to do, I'd get in my car and go find their parents and and do something. That'd be the best idea. I feel like, well, my unregenerate days, I know what I would have done, but but anyway, I really blame the parent. What'd you do? What's the matter with you? Did you have the guts to be a parent? Didn't you have the guts to risk your children being mad at you for a little while? Well, some parents are so weak, that's the word for it, are so weak they simply cannot tolerate Junior being mad at them for a little while. The child seems to be upset with the parent. It's more than some people can take. Well, if you're young and you're that kind of, don't have kids. Sometimes you have to let kids be mad at you for a while. They'll get over it. You kill them. And they'll come around later and thank you when you're able to be a success in life. Whatever they want to do. Now, I realize that many other factors come in. I realize that things happen that are beyond our control. I know that. I'm talking about general rules. Now, every child will test the parent. I'm going to tell you why. This is the closest I ever come to being a psychologist, which I am not one. Why do children test their parents? And strong-willed children test their parents the most. Every child, one time or another, will challenge the parents, some way or another. My first son, Aaron, was a compliant child. I could just point my finger at him, and he could give lessons on how to repent. His big old tears come to his eyes. He was so compliant. Something about it came, that all changed. He became a teenager. The hormones fix that, but he just, you know, and I thought, boy, nothing to raise a boy. I got this down pat. And then my second boy came along 3 years later, Adam, and I'd point my finger at him, and he'd look at me like, just who do you think you are? He's in diapers, you know. He'd throw a shoulder up, and what he's saying, I'm not going to do it. Let's see you make me. I'm not going to do what you want just because you want me to do it, and I'm just going to see if you can make me do it. You think kids don't operate that way? Maybe they don't use those words. That's exactly what's going on in their mind. Why do kids say to parents, in effect, let's see you make me do it? Especially strong-willed children. Well, you know, the theologians, the Calvinists have an answer. It's called the total depravity. Kids born with sinful nature. That's what Dobson says, but he's wrong about that. I'll tell you why kids do it. Let me give you an analogy. It can help us to understand. Suppose you were, all of a sudden, found yourself in some mythical kind of way, found yourself plopped down in a world, or on a world, that you didn't know anything about. But you knew one thing. You were the smallest, weakest thing in it. In this world in which you find yourself. And, how would you feel? I'll tell you how you'd feel. You'd feel scared. Suppose you're on this world that you suddenly find yourself in, and you're the smallest, weakest thing in it. Everybody's bigger than you are. You're kind of in a clearing, and out there in the woods, beyond this clearing, and in the jungle, you hear all kinds of noises. You don't know what they are. You don't know if they're threatening your life or not. There are all kinds of, you see images of things, creatures perhaps, there in the woods, and you don't know whether they're out to get you or not. But lucky for you, there's a fence around this clearing in the wilderness. And that fence keeps out whatever's out there, keeps it out there, makes you safe. What you do? Every so often, well, my question is kind of vague, so I'll answer myself. What you would do is every so often you'd test the fence just to make sure it's in good condition. Because whatever's out there, that fence is the only thing that's keeping you safe. That fence is your security. So you'll push on the fence to see if it feels good and strong. How would you feel if you walked up to the fence one day and pushed on and fell over? What would you lose? Well, you lose your security. Why? Well, here I am in this world, and I'm the smallest thing in it. Everything scares me. I don't understand anything in it. And the only thing, my only protection is this fence, and I'm stronger than it is. If I can push it down. So certain that whatever's out there can push it down. And I really have no security. You see, a baby born in this world, he finds himself in just that, exactly that kind of world. He's the smallest, everything has to be done for him. He's the smallest, weakest thing in it. And this goes on for a long time. And thugs never get over it. And he sees all kinds of things and hears all kinds of things. He doesn't understand what they are. You ever notice how a child, and so this child, his fence is his parents, his mother particularly. It's his parents. That's why, you ever see a child, you can take an infant and put him in a wild situation and he'll panic unless he's got his mother there. He can hang on to his mother. And he doesn't care what's out there, you know. You can take him to a circus. You can take him for all time, anything goes on. As long as he can hang on to his family, you know, his mother, while he's happy as a clam. He doesn't have to understand. He doesn't have to know whether some of those things will get him and some won't. All he has to know is he's got mother. But suppose, and so this is why kids test their parents. What they're saying is this. They don't use these words. This is what's going on. They're saying, you know, I'm really afraid of life. So much to be afraid of. And I want to know if you're tough enough for me to trust. See, the issue is only security. The issue, the reason a child will rebel and will say to you, in effect, let's see if you... When he says, I'm not going to do it, now let's see you make me. Some kids even say that, and you're going to define. What they're saying is, I am scared of whatever, of this world, and you're my security, and I'm going to see if you're tough enough. And when the kid pushes on the wall and it falls down, it doesn't have to fall down every time. It falls down half the time. Or if it falls down 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 30, the kid to that extent loses their security. You see, when a kid challenges you, he wants to lose. He'll cry in the process of the battle if you warm up his South 40. But he really wants to lose it. He's tickled to death. Now, the more a kid tests his parents, the more the kid is crying out for security. That's what's going on. And it is the responsibility of the parent. God gave the parents the responsibility to give the child that security. My first child, my oldest daughter, was a strong-willed child. Classical textbook strong-willed child. I mean a real one. You tell her not to touch the doodads on the coffee table, you know, and she'll look you right in the eye. If you're having a kid do this, look you right in the eye, put your finger right up, you know. Just look at you. Put your finger over there. Father gets so close, you couldn't put a piece of paper between her finger and that. Knick-knack. You know? And then just watch it, and I go, and just see what you do. Of course, and sometimes they'll come back 2 or 3 times. You spank them, you know. We'll see, you know. And so then the compliant child once is, you know, really with Aaron, I could just say no, he wouldn't touch it for the next 10 years. I mean, he'd die before he touched it. Adam, he's a little bit strong-willed, and Leslie might. Another two are kind of the middle. They might try it once or twice. LeAngela, I mean 4 or 5 times, she'd, you know, keep coming back. You know, it's like, we'll see if you know. That was a riot. But luckily, her mother is more the stubbornest one I ever met. And, I mean, if she touched it 5 times, she got 5 spankings. If she touched it 7 times, she got, I mean, that fence never fell down. And you got to spank a strong-willed child more. And a parent hates to do that. You get to feel like you're abusing the child. It doesn't seem fair. Sometimes I feel sorry for the sister or brother of a strong-willed child who's not strong-willed. Sometimes the parent will spank them just to keep it even. You know, I'll spank you more while we get But that doesn't really work that way because children just don't need the same things. You got to give a child what they need. Now. And the beautiful thing about a strong, I had a sister who has a strong-willed child, a son, just like her, cut out of the same mold. And he was about 2 years older than my oldest daughter. And his father didn't have a sense God gave a goose. I mean, he talked about the fence falling down. The fence never was up. There wasn't a fence. He just, every once in a while, they'd get lose their temper and beat on the kid, and that's about it. And this is a good kid. He's raised in a Christian home. But he never could control himself, and he hated himself for it. Listen up. When this kid was 15 years old, he went to his parents and asked them. This kid was smart. He was beating on his mother. See, when a kid is 5 years old, it can be kind of, you know, it's not too bad, but he can be 15. He was beating on his mother, and he went to his mother and father and asked them to put him in an institution so he could learn to control himself. He's an intelligent kid, good kid, Christian kid. And they did. And he overcame a part of it. He beat up on one of my daughters one time after this, but that was a relapse. He just was humiliated, but he just could not control himself. And he wanted to control himself. But you get a strong-willed child. You see, the secret with all children, and not just strong-willed children, the secret is to break their will without breaking their spirit. You have to break their will. And that's hard. Parent, like I said, you get to really feeling bad. But if you break the will of a strong-willed child, leave the spirit intact. What you've got often is a super kid. You've got a kid who will accomplish amazing things. They tend to be very intelligent kids. And this strong will, which makes them such a hard child to raise, will often give them the ability to accomplish amazing things. I this is a parent bragging, but my oldest daughter, who would just defy you when her blood was up. When she got to be up in junior high and on up, her mother and I just enjoyed sitting back and watching her accomplish things. When she was a freshman at the college, first quarter, freshman year, she made the highest grade in the freshman class. Why? Because she made up her mind. It hadn't made sense. Didn't care. She makes good grades. But she was going to do it. She was going to show herself and me or whoever was looking on. And she was going to make the highest grades in the freshman class. And she could do it. Once she knew she could do it, once she accomplished that, and she forgot about all the other things. But it took an interesting mentality. Just a strong, just like a bull. And growing up, she would accomplish. Once she accomplished one thing, she wanted something else. And she just knew a list of accomplishments. She was second runner-up Miss Orlando, Orange County Junior Miss, Girls State, Girls Nation, National Honor Society, cheerleading, select on. Everything she'd go, the teacher says, what's she going to do next? Well, my second daughter accomplished a number of things, but she didn't care. She's a happy girl. She's kind of normal. Kid, she made cheerleader and a few things and had a good time. But there was not this driving, whereas the Angela would just grit her teeth, just home over, I'm going to do it. Leslie would, if it came okay, if it didn't. I mean, the sun comes up fine, it doesn't come up. I got a brother like that. Who cares? Hang loose and she enjoy herself. And just a different kid. What she would have done, she didn't. Now my oldest son is a little bit like his oldest sister, but not completely. He likes to accomplish, but he doesn't grit his teeth. So the kid will grit his teeth and defy, will grit his teeth and accomplish great things if you can break the will without breaking the spirit. But it's a tragedy. A strong-willed child therefore has it's like a gun. You got to be careful where you aim the thing. Go off and break it. Well, that makes sense to you. The issue is security. The issue is security. And the child who will defy you is the child looking for security. And kids want this. You ever hear of little kids? You got a kid who's 11, 12 years old. If their dad doesn't make a mind and they're talking to their other friends, I don't know about girls, but boys don't lie about it. As if their father is not a strong disciplinarian, they'll never admit that to their friends. They'll tell their friends, well, my dad, you can't bring my dad around. Isn't that strange? They'll create a father in their own mind who's a strong, they want that. In other words, boys, I speak like I'm a man's point of view, but boys, the last thing a little boy wants is a daddy who asks his permission to be his daddy.
He can put up with all kinds of stuff. He can put up with being with temporary injustices. He can put up with being misunderstood. He can put up with all kinds of things, but as a kid, kid's got a word for it. It's called a wimp. I mean, if a guy's got a daddy, a wimp for a daddy, he'll lie about it to his friends. That's how much they want this. It's very important to them. And they, because they feel secure. Same thing, anybody talk about express love and mother and dad express love? The kids always show up and lean on it, and you start hugging your wife and the kids. Why? It's security. That is, my dad is there to depend on. My parents are tough. You can't push my parents around. What does that mean? That means if I ever get in trouble, I don't know where to go. And what it does with kids, it gives them the self-confidence to launch out, knowing they've got a strong base. You know, see, a kid who knows that there's a haven of safety he can always run back to, he'll go out farther. He'll try more things. He'll be more self-confident. You ever notice how little kids play? When they first get old enough to be put outdoors, you know, just let themselves, what will they do about every 20 minutes? They'll find some excuse to come in. God, the mother, bad. And the mother who doesn't understand will say this. Every mother has said this. We either stay in or stay out. Make up your mind. Either come in or go out. But why do you keep coming in? You know, especially if it's wintertime, they track the mud in, you know, wear out got a screen door. Most houses, they raise little children, they've got screen doors. The screen doors are falling apart. You know, why? Kids keep coming back in. Why? I'll tell you why. You get a little kid just old enough to go out and play. He and the other kids are doing things they've never done before. They're trying new things. So that, and they can only do that for so long. They need to go back in and get a hug. A verbal hug, maybe. And come in to get some reassurance. Everything's okay. It's kind of like, okay, here we go again. And they'll go back out. And they'll try it again. And then they'll do a little bit, you know, they'll go back in. And that's what they're looking for. What they need is a parent to say, hey, how's it going? Give them a scratch their head, give them a, and they're ready to go again. That's why they're in the house. They don't want to drink the water. They don't need to go to the bathroom that much. And it never stops when they get older. They know that they're with mom and dad, there's an anchor there, something strong they can depend on. They'll go out and try things. And you got to let them try things. You see, there's a difference between closeness and dependency. A lot of families think they're close. Their kids, me and my kids are really close. Maybe they are. Some parents who think they're close to them, who think their kids are close to them, kids aren't close at all. They're just dependent. They create all kinds of, that is, if there's not this healthy kind of connection, security, they create all kinds of artificial kind. It is, they'll tell the kids, for instance, a very silly parent who conveys the message to the kid, look kid, you really need me. You really can't get by without me. You'll never make it without me. Kids need to be told by the parent, look, you can do anything. You can do it. I'll be here, but you go out and try it. You get your lumps, come back. This is where it's hard. I recall, you know, one thing I think the reason God likes me to be a man and a woman raising kids is, you know, a man can bring a point of view that a woman can't raising kids, and a woman can bring a point of view that a man can. I don't know. My wife is a magnificent job of raising girls. She's not quite so good at raising boys for clear reasons. I recall when our boys got old enough to, you know, what kids like to do? They get out and play. You know, boys don't ride a bicycle. They ride it for a little while, then they got to jump it, slide it, you know, prop on one wheel, you know, sometimes this way. You know, they just go, why? Well, that's part of being a boy. You got to try themselves. I forget when my boys got that age. They had a couple of little junk bike that all the kids learned to ride on. It's just since gone the way of all flesh. I forget what other bike they had, but the neighborhood kids were out in front of the building, the ramps. And I'll fall like a jumper saying, my wife had heart failure. She said, you're gonna kill yourself. And she couldn't stand to look. So I said to her, this brother, I said, look, honey, these are boys. They gotta try themselves. And they were due for bikes anyway. There's a couple of birthdays coming up. So I went down and splurged the motor. They built bikes just for that, you know, long frames and heavy spokes. They built them just looking really tough bikes. And I said, honey, just try not to look.
And we'll take them to the hospital and get them sewed up. We kept the emergency room, you know, in busy. I don't know how many stitches. They both of them had several stitches. And I said, they're gonna fall on their head and cut themselves open. But there are worse things than that. So I said, let them go out and try it, you know. And when they're wrecked, we'll patch them up. They're better that than what? Than raising a couple of kids, boys, who are afraid of life. They're afraid to try things. And you see, yeah, those boys, my boys aren't going to accomplish anything in life. They're going to have to find their times when they're going to try. If they don't grow up being allowed to try things that they're really scared to do, they'll never accomplish anything. If they're going to accomplish anything in life, you got to try things that you're afraid to do it. Right? And fear stops you. And so many parents, they just keep the kids dependent on them. Oh, no, can't do that. You better ruin a kid. Give the kid, give him this base of security and love. And kick him in the rear end and say, get out and try it, kid. If you flunk, if you don't make it, you don't make it. But that doesn't mean you're a failure. So we got to give kids room to fail. One thing security does, I'm kind of jumping around because of time. We have a philosophy in our manual. I'll just share it with you. You can take what it's worth. We told our kids from the time they were in diapers, my wife taught me this, we have told from the beginning, and now look, don't you know something? You're not an ordinary kid. You're a special kid. You're special. You're a winner. Now you may think that's arrogant. May not like that. Then you're wrong. But you look, I'll just tell you, my wife and I are not the least bit interested in raising ordinary children. You look ordinary lately. Do you know what you have to be ordinary in today's youth culture? I mean, you can be nothing to be ordinary. The average is way down. So we tell them that you belong to our family. We don't play by other rules. We're Christians. We play by Christian rules, and we have our own family rules, and we don't care what anybody else does. You're not like everybody else. You're a special person. And we tell them from the beginning, you're a winner. You're a thoroughbred. We don't raise losers. That doesn't mean you win everything. Many kids, they're raised with such little self-confidence that takes about one or two failures, and they quit. You realize that our junior high schools are full of kids who've already quit. I'm not talking about college. I'm talking about junior high school. Kids who have quit. Why? Well, they were raised with such a fragile sense of security and self-worth that they've tried two or three things. When they didn't make it, it proved to them that they were losers. And so they said, well, I can't really make it through anything. And we tell them, you're special. Look, you're not ordinary. You're a winner. You say, and winners lose sometimes, don't they? I don't know a winner yet didn't lose. And there's a difference between losing and being a loser. I remember when kids try things and they don't make it. All of our kids, your kids have done it, haven't they? Will do it. They try things they don't make them. And what's it going to do to them? You make it next time. And all these things kind of lump together. I realize that I'm trying to talk about too many things this morning, but and let me give you another friend's benefit of this thing. If you are different, we didn't realize this going in, but we learned this when the kids got into high school. One of the real problems that parents face is called peer pressure. It is devastating to some young people. Peer pressure. Now, some peer pressure is harmless. For instance, I think that most kids want to sort of wear what's in style when they go to school. Not just high school, but grade school. They want to wear what the other kids are wearing. Well, I think there's no reason. There's no reason. As long as it's modest and not crazy. I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's an unnecessary burden for the kid. Dressing different is the same as being different. There's some peer pressure which is harmless. But there's some peer pressure which is very harmful. And if kids are raised with the conviction that this in their subconscious mind from their very early years, that they really don't, they're not really a part of it, that they're different from the world. They're special. Then we found that peer pressure simply had very little effect on the children. It never really came home to me until, of course, with my second daughter, Leslie, one evening, she was in junior high school, and she was one of the editors on the school yearbook, school newspaper. And she had undertaken to write a series of articles making fun of drinking beer and smoking and using dope. I'm a can of beer, this is what I'll do for you. the kids pretty good point of view. You know, I'll dissolve your brain, make you vomit, all kinds of good stuff. And a kid would write, and if I, you know, I'm a joint, you know, marijuana, and this is what I'll do for you. And it was, and she was coming down pretty hard, you know. And she's sitting there, sat there under the table, supper table. We're sitting there eating, you know, and our family talk, and she's telling me about all this and how some of the kids, a lot of kids were shouting, were calling her names in the halls, hollering at her. You know, he just eating away as happy as he could be. And of course, her father, you know, the idea of your little daughter getting called names, you know, and I put my spoon down, and she's still eating, you know, and I'm turning red, and she's, you know, oh, you must get along fine. I just couldn't take any more, and I was really upset. I said, well, let's see. That what they said about it was simply not relevant. It didn't enter her world. It never occurred to her that she should be embarrassed or even care what they think about her. It's interesting. And the peer pressure has never been a problem with us. We didn't plan it that way. We sort of lucked out or whatever. And when you get to discipline kids, if you train them with this, let me show you. If you notice the kids don't like sermons, you can try to preach a sermon to a kid. You get to point one, you're already talking to yourself. I mean, you lost them in the introduction. Right? Especially a teenager. Teenagers not want to be told what's right and what's wrong. You know why? They already know. Kids are not stupid. They know what's right and what's wrong. But you start talking about going smart. They'll listen to you. And if you tell them this thing being special. Let me show you how different this sounds. You say to the kid, look, well, now, you're going to start dating now. You're going out with your friends, and you're going to do what you're going to do. Your mother and I can't stop you, and God won't. Now, I want you to be a good boy. I just want you to remember something, that you're not an ordinary kid. You're special. You're quality. We raised you to be quality. Some kids were never raised to be quality. They don't know how to be quality kids. The parents never taught them how to be quality, but you know how to be quality. And here's your choice. You're either going to be quality or you're going to be cheap. Up to you. Listen. The kid listens to that and turns the kid on. You say to the kid, are you going to be good or evil? Turns the kid off. So remember, you're a quality person. You have to build the person up. It's like to be told that. Would that make you mad? Somebody say to you, remember, you're a quality person. What's that like? They like that. Remember one time? Yeah, teach them. Teach them when they're little. I don't believe in spanking children because they're bad. I never spank children. I spank children only because they're good. See, if they're bad, and if they do something bad, then it's acting normal. You shouldn't spank a kid for acting normal. Did you ever hear a parent say to a kid, why are you so bad? Why do you have to be so bad? Parents scream that at their kids. I just don't understand this. I do my best and you're so bad. And I'll never say that to a kid. You're good. Listen, see how this sounds. You can discipline kids without turning them off. Say, look, I'm going to give you a spanking now because you disobeyed me. You knew you shouldn't have done this, right? Now, if you were bad, it wouldn't make any difference how you acted. If you were an ordinary kid, make a difference, but you're not bad, you're good, and you're special, therefore, since you're good, this kind of behavior is intolerable. We spank them because they're good. Depends on how you look at them. I learned this from Hebrews 12. God doesn't have any sons, he doesn't discipline. There was a conversation I had with Adam, he was about 7, I had to spank him or something. By the way, as I said last week, I can't remember. Good discipline doesn't mean a lot of spanking. I can't remember the last time I spanked a kid. It's been that long. But, let's say, with good discipline, most of your spanking is over by the time they're 4 or 5 years old. Not in every case. But anyway, Adam, my theologian, he thinks in the abstract. You know, he likes to see the reason. He wants to see the principle. That's the way his mind works. He was a father's son. Anyway, I had this idea, and he was feeling kind of like life was unjust. The kids will think that way. That's why I thought it was time to teach him the philosophy of the thing. Other kids didn't care, but he cared. So I said, Adam, I'm asking you, he said, you don't like being smacked, do you? Oh, he didn't like being hard at it. Very sensitive kid. And I said, now, why do you suppose I spanked you? I had to spank you, this kid. wasn't too sure. Said, we don't do it here right now. Okay. I said, let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen me spank the kids up the street? Thought, you know. No, he couldn't remember me ever spanking the kids up the street. And I'd like to, but never did. I said, why do you suppose I spank you and don't spank them? The light begins to dawn. He said, because I'm here. I said, that's right. I said, listen, don't you know something? You're mine. And I love you. There's not a thing in this world that's any more important to me than what you become. I love you too much to let you grow up to be a jerk. Because you're mine, and I have spanked you. Now, if you were an ordinary kid, and you weren't mine, it would make a difference. Said to him, why am I disciplining you? Why am I grounding you? Because you're worth too much. You grew up to be a jerk. And we don't raise jerks in this house. We don't raise losers. We raise quality people. And that's what you are, and that's what you're going to be, or I'm going to kill you. Now listen, a kid will accept that. Now, I was kidding, I never told a kid I was going to kill him, but they know I might. Why? I'm not that he said, you know, you holler at a kid, look. You think I'm in the business of raising losers? The world's already got its quota of nerds, doesn't it? It's got all it needs. I'm not raising jerks around here. You're not one. If you think I'm going to let you act like one in this case, you're crazy. He'll smile all over. You can discipline a kid and build his image at the same time. Or you can just punish him and tear him down. A lot of parents don't know it. Don't realize what you're doing. You're tearing their kids apart. I wonder why they got very little left. Parents call me, son. But what happened? The kid just fell apart. You can only pack at something so long, sometimes they fall apart. Well, I hope this has made sense to you. But you see, the purpose of discipline is selfish, to help kids to be what they really want to be. And then, the underlying philosophy under this is, and I'll just share this with you, and time's about now, I'll be sure I put it on time, is raise your kids so you can like them. A lot of parents, they don't like, they're not around their kids very much. They get a babysitter every opportunity. They'll put them in a daycare center whether they really need to or not, go to work, whether they need the money or not. Why? But they just don't like being around their kids. And I've seen some of their kids. Listen, nobody likes an obnoxious little snot, even if it's yours. You may love them. A lot of parents love their kids, they don't like them. Raise your kids so you can like them, and then like them. One of the things this will do is it'll make life easier for them. For instance, if you like your kids, chances are other adults will like them. It's a great gift to give to a child to raise them so that adults like their kids. And kids know how to get along with adults. You see, when you send them off to school, that's going to be an adult teaching them. And if they know how to relate well to adults, then life will be easier. When it comes time to get a job, if they know how to relate to adults, they can get a job. Simple things like, we never permitted our kids to call adults by their first name. We call adults by their last name. Unless they're a relative, we call uncle or aunt or something. You always get this old lady in the church who says, now, just let him call me Edith. And we say, no, it's our kid, not yours, and he's going to call you by your last name. And that's the way it is. Sorry, I don't want to offend you, but I'm not responsible for raising you. I'm responsible for raising this one. And they're going to call by their last name. By their last name. Why? How it works. Common respect. Things like that. So raise your kids you can like them. And I tell you, it's a great joy. I'd rather be with my sons and daughters than anybody I know. I love my kids. If they weren't mine. I need to tell this. Let me make this one more point. I need to tell kids that. Kids, now listen, this is one of the most important messages we can ever get across to our kids is that we would like them even if they weren't ours. So we do not, you see, if the kids get the impression my parents love me only because I'm theirs, then they grow up feeling tolerated. And nobody likes to be tolerated. If you get this message across, that you're delighted with their presence, that you would like to be if they weren't yours, it's one of the greatest gifts you give to a kid. Sure, it works. I promise. This is scientific. And I've done it 100 times more. And I don't these little kids, big kids. You say to a kid, I love you, and you ought to say it at least once a day. And that's good. That's the foundation. But you say to a kid, I like you, once in a while. And kids, if they have the physical, you'll see a physical transformation. Lady Manager would always skip. Leslie would run. Adam skips every time. Aaron, it's a physical change. You say to the kid, you're sitting there watching television or something, you say to him, say, you know, I've been looking at you lately. I want you to know I like what I see. You're my kind of people. I like what you're doing. I'm glad that you're mine, not somebody else. It's like having you around. You say that to him. You watch what happens to that kid. You will see that. I follow you. You can photograph it. It just literally turns the kid on. And says to him, look, I like my kids. I think their jokes are funny. I like their friends. You've always had a house full of kids. I like their friends. I like kids. I love teenagers. Drive me crazy. But I love them. They've all shown good taste in friends. And I want them to know that I like them. See, one of the reasons some teenagers never go home is nobody likes to be where they're not liked. And one more word. You ever notice that you never pay attention to somebody you don't like? Somebody doesn't like you, or you don't like them. Especially if you know they don't like you. You never listen to a word. You'll disagree with me if you know they're right. Somebody doesn't, you see, we're all egotists. We're all arrogant. If somebody's not smart enough to like me, he can't teach me. What possibly could he know about anything else? Listen, time's going to come. These kids get to be teenagers. You're going to want them to listen to you. You're going to give them advice. It's going to be very important advice. And if they know that you like them, they'll listen. You convey the message that you just told them you don't like, that you really don't like, you don't like the way they wear their clothes, you like their music, you like the way they wear their hair, you don't like their friends. That adds up that you don't like me, and what do you know, Charlie? I'm not going to listen to you. But they know that you like them. If I know somebody likes me, anybody that smart is bound to have something to say. And I'll just listen. Raise your kids so you can like them.